From the Lynn to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 20th day of February, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Ben Brown, agricultural economist from FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri. We'll hear from Travis Mateer about this coming Thursday's IPT, or Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale, and we'll take a look at how state legislation is impacting the siting of wind and solar farms across the Midwest, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. The All-Day Ag Outlook is 2 weeks from today. It's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I sure hope we'll see you there. If you've not picked your ticket up yet, you can do it right now at WILLAG.org. The Farm Doc Team, University of Illinois Extension, and Illinois Public Media invite you to Covington, Indiana for a fantastic ag conference. We'll cover all kinds of things, including crop insurance and the ARC PLC decision, SAF or sustainable aviation fuel, and of course, the price outlook for corn and soybeans and wheat.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Ben Brown from FAPRI, that's the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri, and with Extension now joins us. Hi, Ben. Thank you for being with us. I'd like to go back through last week's USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum numbers. They put out supply and demand tables for the new crop, or the crop that's about to be put into the ground for corn and soybeans, for wheat as well this year. Can you run through some of those numbers for me, please?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Todd. So USDA's first look at new crop 2024-2025 supply and demand is always of interest. However, it will change by the time we get around to the start of, I guess, the marketing year. It's not really the marketing year, but they'll come out with their first balance sheets in May. This is kind of like a precursor to that, if you will. And so it is closely watched. They were bearish as expected. I don't think anybody really should be all that surprised with the numbers that we're looking at here. And we'll, you and I can talk through some of these, but I want to give a flavor here of what we're talking about on the acreage side. So, you know, USDA came out with their expectations of 2024 acreage, all wheat acreage down to 47 million acres, so down 2.5 million acres from last year. I think that was kind of represented a little bit in the winter wheat seedings report that we got in January. It certainly suggests some softer spring wheat acres than what we've had. Corn acreage at 91 million acres, that probably was a little bit of a surprise to people, and we can talk through how that might change. It was close to what our number was at 90.5 million acres, but that's down, you know, from 94.6 last year. And then soybean acres up almost 4 million acres to 87.5 million. So those are the numbers that'll change. Producers will get their opportunity to, you know, supply USDA with their planting intentions here in the next month. Of course, those will be the numbers that are used in USDA's first balance sheets that come out in May. So kind of a little bit of a precursor, if you will. These numbers will change by the time we get around to May, but a bearish picture for new crop prices, I think, to start out with.
Yeah, so they used what, $4.40 for the season's average cash price for corn. I'm not looking at them. I think $11.20 for soybeans. And $6 for wheat, if I remember from
that is correct. Yep.
From their numbers.
Good memory, Todd.
So these are numbers that farmers will not be happy with, are not happy with. I'm thinking about how you look at them. A lot of it is about the carryout above 400 million bushels for soybeans, 2.5 billion for corn. These are also big numbers, but their usage figures were big as well, if I remember correctly.
Absolutely, yeah. So you're right. So the carryouts here are certainly not supportive of higher prices. In fact, you could argue that these carryouts of 2.5 for corn, you know, and over 400 million bushels for soybeans, you know, they would even kind of maybe suggest even softer prices here in the next few months as we start thinking about new crop, you know, those deferred contracts and producers pricing grain. So certainly large supplies, large carry-ins that are going to create big ending stocks and suppressed prices. But you are right. We are seeing a little bit of return of usage. My positive thing that I like to remind people is it is a lot easier to find uses of demand when prices are cheap, and you can kind of throw some stuff against the wall and see what sticks. It makes corn grind for ethanol a little bit cheaper. It makes soybeans used in renewable diesels cheaper, and we start to see a little bit more demand pick up. But globally, there is enough supply, and that's what's feeding into growing stocks here in the United States and lower prices for producers.
Now, last fall, particularly for corn and soybeans, we started talking about the export window and that tightening up because the supply coming out of South America would go deeper into the harvest season because it was so big. I'm wondering what impact you think that had on exports for old crop, and given the supply side out of Brazil and Argentina this year, what it will mean for new crop.
Sure. And yes, I think we have seen an impact on ag exports. I'll start with the soybean side first, because that was, that's what you're referencing there in terms of our defined season for soybean exports kind of is truncated when South American soybeans come onto the market. South America, primarily a combination of both Brazil, Argentina, and Paraguay. Very strong, production again this year, even though Brazilian soybean production came in a little bit softer than what was initially anticipated, still very strong production. And then you add all three of those countries together and you've got, a record output of South American production that's going to trigger into, elevated levels of soybean exports. So, that product is hitting the market. It is cheap. It is feeding into the global marketplace. And as a result, we've seen our export sales really kind of taper off for soybeans. So on the most recent week here, just 13 million bushels of soybean sales. That's pretty comparable to where we normally see them this year, but that kind of signals up to an end, if you will, to soybean sales until we get later in the summer, and those South American supplies start to dry up. So that's on the soybean side. On the corn side, I think we will talk about for years to come China removing some of the phytosanitary restrictions on Brazilian corn. What was that, a year and a half ago, when they made that change? That has opened up the opportunity for Brazilian corn to enter in the Chinese marketplace, and they have supplied that market very strongly, kind of at our expense as well. Now, we are exporting corn. Corn exports have been, one of the the strengths, I think, here in the last couple of months as we've seen lower prices, it's brought back some export demand for our product. But Chinese supplies of corn entering in the Chinese market is, I think, something we'll be talking about more and more over the next couple of years.
Are you worried in particular about farmers in Missouri across the Midwest for the coming growing season? Have you done the crop budgets, and how rough do they look?
They look pretty rough. And We've started preparing growers, I think, to think about, a lean year. And certainly we've seen input costs come down in some categories, but other costs are elevated. And as a result, total costs, while down a little bit, haven't fallen near as far as what crop prices are. So I do anticipate, a margin squeeze as we look ahead, not only for Missouri, but across the region. And I think we are in line maybe for some lean years here of very low profitability, low margins, and elevated interest cost. We'll have to be crafty, I think, in how we think about stuff and look for opportunities to add value where we can. It's not a pretty picture. It's kind of bleak, if in a way, but it's how I see things right now, and extension services all across the Midwest will work to help where we can. So
thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Ben Brown. He is with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at University of Missouri, and an agricultural economist with Extension. Wind and solar projects are popping up more and more often in places across the whole of the Midwest, but so is opposition from local governments, which have placed restrictions on wind and solar farm construction. Now, as Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows reports, two Midwestern states have recently passed laws making it hard for local governments to say no to green projects.
The farmland out where Jerry Edwards lives in northern Piatt County, Illinois, is flat enough that he can point a mile to the north, where a wind farm will soon be installed.
there will be a tower the size of the Gateway Arch back this way in where the cover crop is. And then in the field just east of it, I mean, we can walk out to the road and see, there will be a second.
The Piatt County Board voted down the project in March of last year. Then 7 months later, they approved it. Edwards, who was the county board's vice chairman, voted no both times. He says other board members changed their no votes to yes because of a new Illinois law. It sets statewide standards for wind and solar projects. In Piatt County, officials worried saying no to this wind farm could lead to a costly legal battle.
In a nutshell, the governor, the speaker of the House, and the head of the Senate basically had a gun held to their head saying, you are going to vote for this, or else you subject the county to lawsuits that would break the county.
Opponents of the wind farms say their eyesores create noise and light problems, as well as potential environmental issues once the turbines wear out. But the state of Illinois needs more wind farms and solar farms to meet its goal of 100% clean energy by 2050. That's according to Northern Illinois University law professor Sarah Fox, whose specialty is environmental law and land use.
If you have local governments around the state unwilling to commit to wind and solar and other things, then Illinois is not going to be able to get to those renewable energy goals that it has set.
Wind and solar farms are built on sites leased by willing landowners, but local opposition has been growing year by year, according to the Sabin Center for Climate Change Law at Columbia University in New York. It counted nearly 300 projects that have faced serious opposition across the U.S. as of last year, and more than 220 local governments and six states that either restrict or ban them outright. Matthew Isenson authored the center's report last year.
I think this is largely due to the fact that developers are proposing projects in new areas, and the local restrictions are often a reaction to, you know, a specific project proposal.
In Michigan, voters in several townships in Montcalm County not only rejected projects, but recalled township officials who supported them. Then, last November, the governor signed Michigan's Clean Energy Future Package into law. It includes limits on townships' ability to say no to wind and solar projects. Supporters say that's a good move for the state's environment and economy. But there's an effort in Michigan to overturn those limits through a state referendum. Retired school teacher Norm Stevens is gathering signatures.
The state's plans of 100% renewable energy and takeover of local control of that zoning is a classic case of government overreach, and they aren't realistic, and nor are they achievable.
Despite pushback, the number of U.S. wind and solar facilities has grown as costs have fallen. Jeff Danielson is with the Clean Grid Alliance, which advocates for renewable energy in the Midwest. He says acceptance of green projects will come in time.
But it will come with some discussion, some conflict, and a reconciling of folks' preferences along the way. We should embrace that because we get to do it in a democratic setting, and that, I think, should be everybody's goal.
But in rural areas of Illinois and Michigan, some residents resent that state law is overriding local authority over wind and solar farms. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Jim Meadows.
Harvest Public Media is a collaborative of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and the Great Plains. Thursday, cattle producers from around the Midwest will converge on the state fairgrounds in Springfield for the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale. It is an event of historic importance as it relates to the genetic composition of the beef herds in the Midwest and its continuing improvement. University of Illinois beef cattle specialist Travis Mateer organizes the sale, and I asked him to tell us a little bit about the background of the event.
So the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale, this will be the 56th year for our program. And I kind of asked a group of extension specialists and educators the other day if they knew of a program that was 56 years or longer. And I got a lot of just crickets in the room. So it's a really a program that's steeped with a lot of tradition and a lot of history. And well, Todd, you put together a video for us that I'll try to share on our Facebook again that describes the you know, the history and the tradition of the sale through kind of Dr. Parrott's word, the late Dr. Parrott's words. But I will tell you that it's a program that I'm privileged to be involved with. The history of the sale started with just gathering performance information on cattle to make better cattle genetic decisions. Obviously, with changes in the industry and technology, that's brought us to today, but the goal is still the same, to offer producers in Illinois and across the Midwest an elite genetic package through these bulls that can help improve their herd. So the goal is still the same. We utilize different technologies. Obviously, one of the newer ones now is that all these bulls have a DNA profile ran on them. So their sire and parent verified, and that information from their genomics actually goes into those EPDs. So we have the most accurate EPDs that we've ever had, and the EPD is that expected progeny difference, and that's more or less the metric that we use to select these cattle genetics. And if anybody's ever seen the movie Moneyball and just making decisions based off of metrics or partly metrics, that kind of goes along with some of the strategy for the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sales to qualify. And then obviously those bulls have to be sound and functional. We do that. So we feel good about the selection criteria from those metrics. And then it's up to the producers to make sure the cattle are fit and in form and function.
How has this sale improved the genetic makeup of the Illinois and Midwestern beef cattle herds?
Well, I'll say, especially from having conversations with those that have been sale managers in the past and on our advisory committee, I think it really set the pace early on for really all breeders to say, here's what I need to be selecting. Here's the standard I need to set for my cattle. And I think, you know, it's hard to quantify, Todd, over 56 years, what this has been. But folks at the University of Illinois Extension have believed in helping producers move the needle and make cattle better and select improved genetics that can offer more value in their marketplace. And so I'd hate to say what that impact would be over 56 years. I would think it would be, you know, incredibly enormous. But here again, it's really a testament to, I think, the performance testing beef cattle, the legacy that's there, folks like Dr. Parrott and those before him. And now I have the opportunity to continue this program. And these breeders are extremely passionate about making better cattle, better beef, better products for the consumer through genetics. And I think that's it's extremely encouraging to be involved with a breeder and a core breeder group that has those goals in mind.
Have the breed associations bought into it?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And I think, so we definitely, we're really partner in many ways with those breed associations. Illinois Angus Association, Illinois Simmental Association have been longtime sponsors of the program. And they see the value in highlighting some of the better genetics, through the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale. And so, yes, there's definitely an emphasis from those breed associations, and they see the value as well.
What do you think it means on the consumer's plate? If I'm just somebody who likes to eat beef, what has this meant to me over the decades?
Yeah, and I think it's meant quite a bit, because we've really strived through this sale to not single trait select cattle. So a lot of the emphasis for our sale order is based off of indexes, profit indexes that include just a variety of traits, and try to make sure that we're not single trait selecting cattle. And in that formula, in those indexes, there's definitely weighting for that carcass quality and carcass impacts. And so we're definitely having an impact to the eating experience through better genetics. And so We know that actually carcass traits are fairly, in terms of heritability, they're higher up there. So the response to a mating decision and what actually comes out, the end product of that steak on someone's plate, is fairly heritable. We like that because we know we can make change rather quickly in that area. So I think as an industry, we've seen a lot of high quality beef hit the market. Prime is not a fabled thing anymore. We've got cattle that go high choice and prime fairly consistency, and I think that goes back to better genetics.
The IPT bull sale is Thursday the 22nd in Springfield. Do people have to be there in person?
They don't necessarily. We'd love for everybody to come and join us there in person at the sale. View the cattle. They'll be on display a couple hours before the sale. The sale starts at 11. The cattle, the bulls, will be on display at 9 a.m. But if you can't attend the sale, we do offer online bidding through CCI Live. We have many producers that want to reach out to us and bid over the phone if they can't make it as well. So we offer that as a service. They just need to contact me as a sale manager to make sure we get them a sale day phone that they can call. That's definitely an option. And if you're just wanting to watch the sale, it's broadcast on that online bidding service, CCI Live, as well.
You can find all that information at the IPTBullSale.com website?
Yep, absolutely. Everything's there. We've got the catalog posted, videos, the bulls, all the sale information, a lot of historical sale results as well. We just want to remind people to visit that website and remember that these cattle have to pass a lot of tests. So there's some other information there as well about our breeding guarantee, the stringent herd health requirements we have for these cattle as well. A lot of sale details, but everything's there on the website.
How many bulls are in the sale this year?
Yeah, this year we've cataloged 48 bulls. So there'll be roughly 48 bulls offered for sale there on February 22nd.
And they sell in what order?
Yeah, so we always do our older bulls first, our senior division. So we'll have Simmental seniors, then Angus seniors, and then we'll move into those really good yearling bulls, Simmental yearlings and Angus yearlings, to finish off our sale. And we do have an older Hereford bull this year as well, so I almost forgot about him, but we'll fit him right there in the middle.
All right. Hey, thanks much. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, Todd.
That's Travis Mateer. He'll head up the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale. You can find all the details at iptbullsale.com. The sale starts at 11 o'clock this Thursday, February the 22nd. That wraps up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. We're online at willag.org. Right now, you can purchase your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's next month on Tuesday, March the 5th, so not very far away now. If you have not purchased your tickets yet, please buy them today. willag.org, and look for the big placard that says All Day Ag Outlook.